Let's continue in this chapter by reading 1 Kings 20, verses 35 through 43. In this last part of 1 Kings 20, we have the account of the unusual way in which King Ahab is told that he will lose his life because he did not execute judgment on the king of Syria. 1 Kings 20, verse 35. Now a certain man of the sons of the prophets said to his neighbor by the word of the Lord, "Strike me, please." And the man refused to strike him. Then he said to him, "Because you have not obeyed the voice of the Lord, surely as soon as you depart from me, a lion shall kill you." And as soon as he left him, a lion found him and killed him. And he found another man and said, "Strike me, please." So the man struck him, inflicting a wound. Then the prophet departed and waited for the king by the road and disguised himself with a bandage over his eyes. Now as the king passed by, he cried out to the king and said, "Your servant went out into the midst of the battle. And there a man came over and brought a man to me and said, 'Guard this man. If by any means he is missing, your life shall be for his life, or else you shall pay a talent of silver.' And while your servant was busy here and there, he was gone." And the king of Israel said to him, "So shall your judgment be. You yourself have decided it." Then he hastened to take the bandage away from his eyes, and the king of Israel recognized him as one of the prophets. And he said to him, "Thus says the Lord, because you have let slip out of your hand a man whom I appointed to utter destruction, therefore your life shall go for his life, and your people for his people." So the king of Israel went to his house, sullen and displeased, and came to Samaria. Once again, let's look at some background notes here. We've got to admit that this is a very unusual story. I mean, one prophet says to another prophet, "By the word of the Lord, strike me." And so the second prophet refuses to strike the first prophet. And as a result, the second prophet is killed by a lion. Sounds like pretty harsh judgment, does it not? And then the same request is made of a third prophet. And the third prophet does hit the first prophet and injures him. Then the first prophet puts on a bandage over his eyes and his, what apparently is a head injury, and he goes to wait for King Ahab to pass by in his chariot. When King Ahab arrives, the prophet tells Ahab a made-up story. And then he whips off the bandage and pronounces Ahab's judgment. What's going on here anyway? Well, first of all, in verse 35, we need to recognize that the sons of the prophets here, they were the Bible colleges or seminaries of the day, right? It looks like they go all the way back to Samuel's time, and certainly under the ministries of Elijah and Elisha, they're greatly strengthened. So what we have here is one of these student prophets says to a second and third prophet, or possibly this second and third prophet are not fellow students, but just ordinary citizens. We can't be sure. In any case, this is an object lesson or a role play. The Lord is using this prophet and his object lesson to show Ahab that Ahab was guilty of letting King Ben-Hadad of Syria go free. The prophet in the role play said that he was a soldier, and in the line of duty, he was given a prisoner to guard. And he was told, if you let that prisoner go free, it'll cost you your life or a talent of silver, an amount of money so great that no common soldier would have that amount. But the prisoner escapes, he tells Ahab. Now he's pleading, you see, in the role play with Ahab for mercy, for clemency. Please go easy on me. Be lenient. I didn't mean to let my prisoner go. While I was busy here and there, he was gone. But Ahab showed no mercy. He said, "You've decided your own fate. You let your prisoner escape, it will cost you your life." And at that, the prophet whips off this bandage, and King Ahab then recognized him as one of the prophets. We read in verse 41 and 42. Then he hastened to take the bandage away from his eyes, and the king of Israel recognized him as one of the prophets. And he said to him, "Thus says the Lord, Because you have let slip out of your hand a man whom I appointed to utter destruction, therefore your life shall go for his life, and your people for his people. Ahab had judged himself. Kind of reminds us of Nathan coming to David with that parable. Remember that case? Thou art the man. David judged himself. Something similar going on here. This prophecy of judgment, by the way, is fulfilled in chapter 22, where Syria defeats Israel and Ahab is killed. The prophecy of judgment is further fulfilled in 2 Kings chapter 10 and 2 Kings chapter 13, where Israel is defeated by Syria. Note, by the way, there in verse 42, that pagan King Ben-Hadad was appointed to destruction by the Lord himself. Ahab had no business making a treaty with King Ben-Hadad. He had no business letting him go free. We read in verse 43 that Ahab went to his house sullen and displeased, came to Samaria. You would think that Ahab would have repented at this point in view of the prophecy of judgment on himself and on Israel, but no. Weak-willed Ahab goes home, sullen, displeased, vexed, angry, just like many people today when they hear the message of judgment that's to come in the future. Let's move on to doctrinal points. Doctrinal point number one, the will of the Lord may be unpleasant at times. The will of the Lord may be unpleasant at times. In verse 35, we see that the word of the Lord, and thus the will of the Lord, was for the second prophet or person to strike the first prophet. Now, we must assume that it was quite obvious here that there was no question that this was the word of the Lord. I mean, it wasn't like, here's what the Lord told me, strike me. Well, how are you supposed to know? It was not like the following illustration. A single woman came to me some time ago and said that a single young man had come up to her and said, the Lord told me I'm to marry you. Well, I said, don't for a minute assume that the Lord told him that he's to marry you. You better make sure the Lord tells you in no uncertain terms. So what I'm saying here is this situation was not something like that. The Lord told me, strike me, you know. It must have been quite clear. We've got to assume here that in the case of these prophets, the word of the Lord was quite clear. Well, why did the second prophet, or ordinary citizen, refuse to strike the first prophet? Well, probably because it was very unpleasant. I don't want to hit you. I don't want to hurt you. Here, maybe just a little slap on the wrist. No, you're to strike me. Well, no, I don't want to hurt you. That would injure you. The will of the Lord may be unpleasant at times. You see the lesson? Definitely a doctrinal point here. To tell non-Christian people, for example, that they are on the road to hell is not pleasant, but it is the will of the Lord. To announce to you this morning that you are forever lost if you're here as an unbeliever, that's not pleasant. I don't like to do that, but it is the will of the Lord. A couple of years ago, a student of mine asked me if they could establish a Paul-Timothy relationship with me, where I would disciple them. Fine, I agreed. But I had to say some very unpleasant things to that student. They didn't appreciate it, at least at that time. I hope they do now. But the will of the Lord may be unpleasant at times. Doctrinal point number two. Lying for a good purpose is not taught in the Bible. Lying for a good purpose is not taught in the Bible. Now, where do we see that lesson taught in these verses? Well, think it through now. Maybe some of you have concluded that because the prophet lied or made up a story in the object lesson here, that the Bible is teaching it's okay to lie, make up a story, as long as it's for a good purpose. Some Christians actually believe that. They believe that it's okay to lie in case of warfare, for example. That's called wartime ethics. Or it's okay to lie if it's the lesser of two evils, if it's the loving thing to do. That's situation ethics. No, not taught in the Bible. Lying for a good purpose is not taught in the Bible. What's going on here is a role play, a drama, an object lesson. The Bible is not condoning lying here. It's like if we were to have a dramatic presentation here this morning. And in the presentation, we had one of the players, the actors, lie or steal. We wouldn't think that this church is teaching that lying is okay for a good purpose. Stealing is okay for a good purpose. Certainly not. It's an object lesson. It's a drama. It's a role play. So don't get the idea that because the prophet lied in this object lesson that the Bible is teaching that it's okay to lie on some occasions if it's for a good purpose. No. Lying for a good purpose is not taught in the Bible. More we could say there. But I want to move to practical application here from this last section of 1 Kings 20. Are we vulnerable to satanic attack? Practical application. Are we vulnerable to satanic attack? In verse 36, we read what was said and what happened to the man who refused to obey the voice of the Lord. Verse 36. Because you have not obeyed the voice of the Lord, surely as soon as you depart from me, a lion shall kill you. And as soon as he left him, a lion found him and killed him. You know, we may have a spiritual picture here in the fact that the man was killed by a lion. In 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8, familiar verse, we read, "Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour." Perhaps we have a picture of that truth taught right here. Why was the man killed by a lion? He disobeyed. That was the bottom line. He disobeyed. He probably reasoned that this unpleasant task of striking this prophet was so small a thing. He didn't want to do it. It wasn't really disobeying the Lord. As a result of that disobedience, regardless of how he looked at it, he was vulnerable to attack by the lion. Are you vulnerable to satanic attack? Am I vulnerable to satanic attack? Are we obeying the Lord in the little things he asks us to do? Are we obeying the Lord in the unpleasant duties of life? Let's take one example. What about discipline in our families? Now, discipline of our children is not pleasant, but it is the will of the Lord. Are we vulnerable to satanic attack because we're not disciplining our children? We think, oh, is that really disobeying the Lord? That's just a little thing, and it's so unpleasant. We may be opening ourselves up to attack because of disobedience in this area. Are we vulnerable to satanic attack? Now, this question certainly could be applied not just to us as individuals, but it can be applied to the church as well. Many churches are reluctant to carry out discipline. They open themselves up for satanic attack. Are we vulnerable to satanic attack?